Good afternoon, good morning, good evening. Welcome to Take 5 of the All About Windows Phone Insight podcast for Friday the 9th of November. It's been a bit of a struggle. Rafe, this was easier when I could slap you over the table.
It was a lot easier. We're doing it over the tube this time, and I've managed to fluff up the intro about four times, I think, and we managed to lose our way in a meandering discussion another time. So hopefully this take will be totally clear, because we've got a lot to talk about. It is, after all, Windows Phone 8 launch week, really.
It is, yes, and I've still no idea who Rafe Bradford is. It's probably somewhere close to Hull. David Gilson and Steve Litchell, by the way, are keeping stock on allaboutsymbian.com. The action continues over there for the old platform, but yes, new platform. Windows Phone 8 devices now available in the UK and parts of Central Europe now for over a week, making their debut in the US stores on Verizon, AT&T and T-Mobile in the next couple of days as well. We are well and truly underway with, well, the third iteration of the third platform, or the ninth go, if you want to look at it that way. But in any case, we've got some lovely handsets coming out. We've got a tweaked operating system. There's what's surprising me, Rafe, is it doesn't seem to have had yet that much impact on the ecosystem. It's quite a sedate and planned handover from 7.5 to 8.
Yeah, I guess that happens with, you know, every major platform when, you know, there's multiple devices around. And you think about something like Android, you know, you've still got devices that are a couple of, you know, revisions old on the market. And we'll have the same thing, of course, with Windows Phone. We actually expect the Windows Phone 7.5 devices to continue for quite some time. So as excited as we get about Windows Phone 8, and we will, of course, be covering that, we're going to make sure we keep talking about Windows Phone 7.5, or at least topics and issues that relate to that, because we're aware that a lot of our listeners out there still have those devices and will continue to do so until they decide to upgrade or maybe go somewhere else altogether. So a lot of the apps, of course, do work across both platforms. There are going to be apps, that, including some we're going to mention in a minute, the Windows Phone 8 only. But I guess it is still pretty early days. You know, the consumer availability has now started and they are in the shops. We're seeing that they're not always available where you get them. In the UK, for example, they're meant to be on everything everywhere, but I know a few people have had trouble getting hands on them. They do seem to be in stock in some of the Phones for You shops, though. In the Americas, you say it's just a few days. We'll talk about the pricing in there in a minute, because I think that's an interesting topic. But yes, it's sort of a busy period, but it's always going to be kind of building up slowly. You know, people fondly imagine that everyone buys the new handset straight away. Well, that might apply to geeks, but most people are probably going to be waiting for a contract renewal or for some other factor. And so it's not an immediate switchover. But there does seem to be quite a bit of buzz about Windows Phone 8. And certainly some of the reviews I've been reading on other sites have been pretty positive. And I've just finished our Lumia 920 hardware review. The part one of that's up there on the site. Plenty of detail. And I came away very impressed with that device. We'll do some Q&A on that in a minute. But yes, we seem to be buzzing along quite nicely, Ewan.
I can see all the hints that you're placing in front of me here. There's buzzing along nicely. There's apps that are only on Windows Phone 8. You want me to talk about Angry Birds Space now, don't you?
I do indeed. Yes, you managed to get the launch preparations spot on for that.
I did. Yes. Up here in my perch in Edinburgh, it's time to look out over there. Hey! Back in on farm.
He's squawking.
Yep, indeed. If you have a flap or a problem with that, just tweet me. Look at that. Double duty. Hey. Right. Angry Birds Space is only available on Windows Phone 8. Come to that in a second. For those of you who are aware of Angry Birds Space, okay, skip ahead. For those of you who aren't, it's a bit like the regular Angry Birds game. You have your catapults. You've got to kill the pigs, and you do that by knocking structures out of the way with various types of birds, grenade birds, and exploding bird, and flying bird, and big bird, and all of that. And the difference here, of course, is gravity. When you pass close to things that are heavy and dense, that have their own gravitational field, your bird is pulled round. So rather than having a flat gravity plane at the bottom of the screen, you have points of gravity. If you imagine it like a great big trampoline and you reach underneath and pull a weight down, you can throw a marble, it kind of follows a curved course. That's what you're doing in Angry Birds. Somebody out there is now thinking of that episode of The Simpsons where they talk about black holes. Yes, just like that.
Yeah, and it's David Gilson is rolling around worrying about we're completely mastering the physics here, but sorry David, It's like parabolas, but with extra gravity.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, David, don't worry. We won't give you Angry Birds, Archimedes, Aristotelian physics to review. That would be interesting. But perhaps one that Peter Vesterbacher can pick up at a later date. It's an Angry Birds game. Yay! It's on our phones, finally. Yay! But let's talk about that finally, Rafe. This was announced in March at South by Southwest, one of the biggest geek festivals right there. They got NASA down. They did. They got the International Space Station to play the first game. Yet it's November. It gets to Windows Phone, and it only arrives on Windows Phone 8. Now, there is a techie explanation here, but can you sum it up in a slightly non-technical way of why it's taken so long for Angry Birds to get here?
Well, it's hard not to do it in a technical way, but I'll try. It's because they haven't been able to do it in a cost-effective way. And that's because it's not as easy to port games onto Windows Phone 7 as it is onto some of the other mobile platforms, because the way you save money when you're developing codes is try and do a cross-platform project, because you can sell it to more people that way. And so the additional cost in going onto Windows Phone 7.5 was prohibitive, didn't make sense. With Windows Phone 8, they're introducing some extra technical features. To be specific, this is support for native C++ code. That's the same sort of code that's used on other platforms. Also game engines, and the game engines are things that allow developers to effectively take a shortcut because they implement sort of graphics shortcuts and physics engines, you know, describing the way something behaves when it's being affected by gravity, for example. And they are now on Windows Phone 8. So I very much suspect Rovio looked at the sums and said, it's only going to make sense for us to do this on Windows Phone 8. You know, by the time they'd done a Windows Phone 7 client, a lot of the devices coming out would be Windows Phone 8. And as people probably know, most people buy their apps and games, or more likely to do so, in the first 6 months of ownership. So I suspect it was sort of a business decision. And you can also, of course, talk about the number of installed devices out there. Windows Phone is relatively few compared to Android and iOS. But yes, people did get in quite a flap about the fact that Angry Birds wasn't arriving on Windows Phone at the same time as all the other platforms.
Which shouldn't happen in the future. And we have an example of that already. Angry Birds Star Wars.
We
the
do.
The advert that is the game that will sell the toy that will actually make the money for Rovio.
Yeah, maybe
too cynical?
Maybe a touch cynical there. I mean, yes, two big brands coming together. And I've played this game on Lumia 920. And actually, I was pleasantly surprised by how faithfully they'd kind of managed to merge the two brands together, and it kind of combines the gameplay elements of both the original Angry Birds and Angry Birds Space we've just been talking about, but adds in some kind of extra actions or new bird type figures. For example, the Luke Skywalker bird, who is the original Red Bird effectively, gets to wield a lightsaber, and the Obi-Wan Kenobi bird gets a force push, and of course Han Solo, the yellow bird, gets to use his blaster.
And does he get to use his blaster first?
He does indeed. The bird shot first. Woohoo!
It doesn't actually matter, Ray, if you realise. What actually matters is if Han shot last.
Well, yes. I think that matters too, yeah. But anyway, It's as you can probably guess, it's using some of the characters. It's also using the location, so it's rather fun seeing the Mos Eisley spaceport recreated with pig-shaped buildings, which, if you actually think about them, they were quite pig-shaped to start with. And of course, you've got Death Stars and pigs dressed in Stormtrooper helmets, and yes, they can't shoot any straighter than the Stormtroopers in the real film as well, so good tie-in there. Pricing of both of these Angry Birds titles is 79p. That's pretty attractive for an Xbox Live title. I'm sure this is going to be a very popular download. But, you know, as I said, it's come out at the same time as iOS and Android and the iPad as well, of course. I think that's, you know, important from a perception point of view. You won't get people going, oh, but it hasn't got X, Y, and Z. And, you know, the app gap that, you know, obviously still exists with Windows Phone, it's not just about a couple of titles. But these high-profile ones do make a big difference. I'm sure there are people out there going, oh, it's got Angry Birds on it. Yeah, that's all right then.
Yeah, and that perception is important because even though you and I will talk about the fact that there's lots of applications there, Microsoft will go, we've got 46 out of 50 of the top applications out there. People are just going to go, Angry Birds, yes or no? Instagram, yes or no? You know, well, we've got a 50% strike right now. That's impressive. We've improved. Yay.
And there's, you know, Flipboard still to come. There's things like Pandora, which is going to be arriving early next year. So, you know, the question becomes, how many of those gaps does Microsoft need to close? Well, the answer is obviously as many as possible, because it's never going to catch up in absolute numbers. I mean, it's pretty self-evident if you have an app store that sort of starts up several years behind its competitors. It's going to be very hard to keep up from a numeric point of view. But I think it's important to get those high-profile titles. And it'll be interesting to see what happens in the future with games in particular, because that's where Windows Phone arguably has lagged behind. It's not just Angry Birds that's been late, but with these new technical requirements or availability, I should say, in Windows Phone 8, I think that might well change, especially as there's a certain amount of sharing possible with Windows 8 as well. And of course, that App Store is just getting going as well. That's just going through the 15,000 mark or so, I believe.
And at some point, we also have to mention the Xbox itself. We do that. There are rumors of the Xbox Surface, a 7-inch gaming tablet, kicking around there. There's the Surface RT and the Surface Pro, and then the Surface Pro Am Celebrity Golf version. All of them are out there as well with your cross-code compatibility. Lots of exciting stuff to keep an eye on. But at the same time, the basics need to maintain. Very briefly on this issue, one that I'm kind of upset about. Cut the Rope is now available on Xbox Live. Cracking little game. Again, it's been out for a long time on other platforms. It's finally made the jump over to Windows Phone 7.5. But correct me if I'm wrong, but this is the first title on Xbox Live to not have a trial version. And I know it's only 79p, and I know that you can practice it in your browser in IE10 and such like with HTML5, but this really upsets me. Xbox Live had me trained to expect a game every Wednesday that I could get a trial for that was relatively good quality.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. This, I was trying to rack my brains when you made this point to me, and I certainly can't think of another title that's got no trial. There are some out there that the trial might as well be no trial, since it allows you about 2 seconds of gameplay or something like that. Yes, exactly. But yes, this was a kind of unique example. I imagine it's, you know, was a requirement that got missed somehow. And I mean, I think both of us would probably say it's worth the 79p to install. So if you think about it, go ahead. And it's great that it's available for Windows Phone 7.5. So those with the older devices get, you know, a really top game here to enjoy.
This week's the older devices.
Yes, I kind of have to watch my language here and not upset everybody. But yeah, it's
or
been
me.
Kind of...
Yes, you
and still waiting to get his hands on a Windows Phone 8 device. We'll hopefully sort that out by the next podcast. But yes, there's been a lot of Xbox Live games this week. I think there's been 4 releases altogether, haven't there, Ewan?
Yeah, I mean, as we had, because I think they're bulking up the Windows Phone 8 ones, but at the same time, they're keeping that regular rhythm that they have with Windows Phone 7.5. But 7.5 or 7.x or however we have to describe it is going to be here for a long time. You know, people are still buying these phones now on 1 year and 2 year long contracts. They're still cracking little devices. The fact that you'll be able to pick these up for £100, £150, you know, SIM free on pay, you know, just chuck in a pay as you go, means that there's a big contingent here. And this is why I've got mentioned this before in the podcast, why I think 7.8, the big thing that will be happening with the 7.8 update is creating a consistent user interface between 7.8 and 8 for portability reasons, more than anything else.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we're actually talking to some Nokia spokespeople about this exact issue, and they pointed out that the Lumia 800 is now available. This is specific to the UK market, on pairs you go for about £150. And if you shop around, you can actually knock another £20 or £30 off that, which is really stonking value when you consider what you're getting.
Yeah, and if you want to go into Comet, you could probably get it for £5.
Yes, that's true as well. And then there's the 610 as well, which is even kind of lower spec. And there are some issues there, I think, around third-party app performance, particularly on startup. But we won't get into that here. And, you know, that's doing quite well in the enterprise market. So, you know, the 7.5 devices, which will become 7.8 devices, are going to be around for some time. People have been tweeting, asking about Windows Phone 7.8 and when it's going to arrive. We don't have any official information on that, or we've been told that there will be announcements on that very soon. So I think we can probably expect something before the end of the year. And the original timetable said it would actually be available on devices by the end of the year. So we'll share more when we know it.
Indeed, yes. They've got to get 8 out the door, and they've got to get it out without any issues. And so far, from a terms of that sort of rollout, it's actually been quite successful. They managed to get review handsets in limited numbers into the hands of certain reviewers. Rafe, you've been sitting with a Lumia 920 for the last week to create the first chapter of War and Peace, by the looks of it.
Yeah, well, it was a slightly long review, but I wanted to go into a lot of technical detail simply because there is so much that's new from the hardware point of view. Now, there's the obvious stuff, you know, with Windows Phone 8, we know they've upped the hardware requirements. You know, that's things like support for high resolution screens, the dual core processors, you know, extra RAM. The actual requirements are basically dual core processor, 512 megabytes of RAM if you're on the lower resolution, the 800x480. If you're on the higher resolutions, it has to be a gig of RAM. And then it's the same 4 gigabyte of internal memory, similar sensor, GPS and all of that kind of thing. But from the Nokia point of view with the 920, you know, they've had an extra year to work on it. And I always felt that the 800 and the 900, it didn't almost feel like a Nokia device. They're kind of off the shelf. And if you know the backstory of this, they were actually being built by a company called Compal for Nokia. And so that was kind of a reflection of the fact that Nokia, from the February 11th announcement, when they were switching to Windows Phone, produced these devices basically, you know, 8 months later, which is pretty amazing when you consider they went not from scratch, because they actually reuse components like the N9 Fabula design language, that's the polycarbonate body. But phone development cycles typically take place over 2 or 3 years. And even something like the 920 still isn't a full development cycle. You can see that in maybe the choice of the processor platform. I think Nokia might have preferred to go ST Ericsson rather than Qualcomm. They're certainly still looking at that, and we may see that in the future indeed. But the things like the PureView camera, things like the screen technology, the quality of the audio components, the quality of the microphones, even the quality of the coating on the screen, they've all had a bit more time to refine that, and that's get that in the materials as well. The buttons, you know, what was the biggest complaint on the 800 and the 900? Yes, it was the scratches on that camera surround. That's fixed because they're now using a ceramic material. So I wanted to try and cover lots of those in the review. We won't go, you know, repeat all of those here, but let's try and recall some highlights, because I know we've got some questions that people would like us to answer. But please do go and read the review and let us know what you think. There's an active comment discussion going on, and I'm pleased to see that there's people saying how much they like the review. So thank you to everyone that's done that. It's done wonders for my ego today.
As I suggest, once you get to about the 3,000 word mark, have a break, stretch your legs, you know, look away from the screen, get a coffee. You don't want you getting any sort of deep vein thrombosis or anything. Right. Something that I don't recall you covering in the review, but you never know, I might have missed it. You got the charging plate as well for this, didn't you?
I did, and I did mention it in the review, so bad points for you and for not reading the review properly.
I would have read the review, but I was doing other important things, like listening to the Lithuanian Heats for the Eurovision Song Contest.
Important things?
It is. It's very important, because if I don't listen to them, I have to mention it on the podcast, and we have a circular reference. Charging pad, does it work? Is it as fast as charging? Would you recommend people pay the extra money to get a charging plate?
Well, it's a good question.
It was three good questions.
I was a bit skeptical about these charging plates. I mean, the accessories are all very nice, and no doubt Nokia Gear knows how to knock out some really high quality accessories. I think they're probably the best of all the manufacturers at this. And the pricing isn't too bad either. The important thing with these Nokia accessories, it's the Qi standard. They've actually opted to put an array of coils in them, and actually the coils, I should say, the way this wireless charging works, it's basically inductive charging. David's done a great article on the site, we'll link to it in the show notes. But by having this array of coils rather than just one coil, you don't have to position the device precisely, either in terms of orientation or in a particular place on the pad. So it's very easy to just chuck it on. That hasn't been true of most of the wireless charging solutions up until this point. So from that point of view, it's practical. Obviously, it's also more convenient than plugging in a cable. And yes, there's an element of laziness to this, but I found myself kind of just putting it on the charger for a quick top up, and it would still sometimes get, you know, plugged into a wall charger overnight for something like that. But as a result, when I was going out in the middle of the day, I had a fuller battery, so there was kind of less battery concern or worry about that sort of thing. So I suspect, you know, I'll change the way I use the device a little bit because of this. The other thing is, it's honestly a really kind of minor thing. It seems lazy again. When a phone call comes in, you can just pick it up. You can then go and walk around the room or whatever you want to do without having to think, oops, I haven't pulled in the cable and I've just garrotted myself, or I've garrotted the cat who happens to be lying across the cable. So that was, you know, I think the thing that made the biggest difference for me, that ability to have it charging, just being able to pick it up, use it and then put it down and start charging again without sort of, you know, getting that micro US cable in place. It does take a little bit longer to charge using the wireless charger. I'd say it's maybe 10%. It's a bit tricky to tell because I haven't done that many where I've just done a full charge from flat. But yes, I would definitely recommend people pick one of these up. the good news is actually in an awful lot of markets, you're going to be able to get it with sort of bundled with a device. AT&T, I know in the States, for example, are doing, while they've still got some stock, and Phones for You are doing something similar in the UK. It will vary from market to market. They are quite expensive to start off with. They will probably drop in price, but given what you get charged for a spare charger, which I think is still around the £20 mark, you know, £40 or £50 for one of these wireless charging accessories, it's not too bad. But if you're not worried about the convenience factor and you're not lazy like me, maybe it's kind of a bit more of a gimmick.
You're kind of on the fence there, but again, it's this first adopter thing, and it's a long time since we've seen that in the mobile phone market, because pricing is so aggressive. You know, there's, you know, people are kind of standardized and look so that the phone prices are expected to be the same. To have something new come in, it's like when GPS first turned up on the Symbian handsets. You know, the GPS-enabled handsets, really, really expensive, because they hadn't got that sort of economy of scale and expectation on the GPS chips. I think we'll see the same with wireless charging. It's also worth pointing out Verizon, we'll skip ahead very slightly in the show notes, they're shipping their version of the HTC Windows Phone 8X with a charging plate. Will stocks last as well, as I recall?
That's absolutely right. It's using the same standard. In fact, a lot of the leading manufacturers are signed up to this Qi standard. It's very big in Japan, where it's been you know, quite widely used for a while. Nokia are really the first ones to push it, big style at least, in the America and Europe. I think that was one of the Samsung Note devices had it built into the back cover, or rather I think it was an exchangeable back cover that you could do it. But of course, you know, with something like this, you actually need a manufacturer that's providing the accessories readily available, because if you try and buy third-party ones at the moment, they're not too bad. I suspect if this is adopted by other manufacturers, which I expect it to be, because it adds very little weight to the device. I mean, the coil is, you know, very thin. If you take apart your 920, which I haven't done, but I have seen the coil, I've got to imagine it's not even a millimeter thick. It's, you know, it's just like a piece of paper, something like that, and then obviously a lead off to the battery and that kind of thing. So it's not a significant part of the device's weight. So, you know, yes, I think it will get taken up a bit more. I think probably the, you know, decisive factor I can say here, for me at least, is I want to buy one of these second charging pads. I will be doing so because I want to have one on the desk, and I want to have one next to the bed or somewhere else in the house, you know, other than the office environment. And I guess that probably is the best endorsement I can give it, that I'm actually willing to go out and get another one because it's so much more convenient.
Yes, Rafe spending his own hard-earned money. Sorry, your hard-earned AdSense clicks. worth pointing out also that the Google Nexus 4, that also has Qi wireless charging as well.
Yes, and these new devices will all work on the same chargers. And Nokia has some of the nicest Qi wireless charging accessories that I've seen. You know, the pad itself is a bit boring, but there's actually a nice desktop stand that also has a NFC integration. So when you tap the phone on it, you can actually start up a specific app, maybe a favorite clock app or something like that. And there's the Fatboy pillow as well. I suspect we'll probably see more of these accessories over time. One of the problems with these accessories for Nokia, at least, has been they don't always get them into the shops very well. Quite often you'll see the cases, but some of their Bluetooth stuff tends to be something you have to order over the internet. Or at least that's been my experience in the UK. It might be different in your market. I'd really like to see them push this a bit more, and it's good to see them bundling it on the early devices, but I suspect those special promotions will run out after, you know, the first couple of months, so they need to keep on that, I think.
Cynical hat on here. The wireless charging is being pushed by Nokia, picked up by a lot of the blogs out there, because Windows Phone 8 is functionally similar enough to iOS and Android that the majority of the reviews are it does everything you would expect it to do. So those very small unique selling points, such as wireless charging, such as the camera, are getting more attention than you would normally expect them to get, because it's the only way to do this is different to this, to this, to this.
Yes, it's probably a fair comment. When you're reviewing a device, you do tend to look for the things that are different. And, you know, the joke is that you'll find five positive things and five negative things to say, and then put a conclusion in. Of course, you don't always weigh those about how important they are. As I said, I was skeptical about wireless charging, but I think I'm, you know, becoming more and more of a convert the more I use it. And that will be especially true if it starts coming into other devices as well. You know, so you won't, you know, it won't be a conscious thought. It will just work. And even more so, I guess, if we see wireless charging, you know, come into, you know, high street, for example, Nokia have done a deal with a coffee shop chain in the States. If they did that with Starbucks, that could then become, you know, a really big deal. And it doesn't have to be Nokia. It could be anyone using this cheese stand and stuff. And I think that could be a cunning bit of promotion, actually, because you could brand that sort of thing, potentially even sell advertising around that. You know, I actually think it's quite a canny move by Nokia, because they're getting quite strongly associated with this wireless charging. And it is almost a perception thing, or marketing led. That said, I said this in my review of the 920. I actually think the hardware innovation that Nokia have put in makes a difference in a way that really matters to the average user. You know, it's not innovation for the sake of it. We had earlier this year the kind of race to quad core, and it just felt like, you know, a pointless arms race. And we've had a similar thing on cameras with more and more megapixels.
But no, it was a pointless arm race.
Oh, thank you, Ewan. the point about, you know, this wireless charging, it is more convenient. The point about, you know, the optical image stabilization, it's got a long name, plenty of technical reasons. It means you take better photos in low light conditions and video captures much better. You get rid of jerky cam. And then with something like the screen, you know, you've got this super sensitive touch. It means you don't have to take your gloves off to answer a phone call when you're freezing outside with, you know, in the middle of the winter snow. And, you know, you can use your fingernails if you've got long fingernails or whatever it happens to be, or if you prefer using a size, you can use that. And it doesn't detract from this, you know, it still works as a capacitive screen just fine. I remember a few years back, we had the arguments between resistive and capacitive screens. And some said resistive was better because it was more flexible with what it worked with. And people preferred capacitive because it was more natural, it was easier to use. This is kind of the best of both worlds. And I strongly feel that a device should not make you use it in a certain way. It should fit to the way you want to use it. And that's where I think these innovations from Nokia do come in. So I think it's actually fair enough that they're getting highlighted in all the reviews. But yes, it is unusual to see that kind of hardware differentiation in these devices. You know, you only need to look, we've talked about form factor before, you need to look at the devices out there to see they're very similar, the technology then the same. Take cameras, for example, they're all using, you know, optical image formats, you know, that it's all roughly the same size, the actual physical size of the sensor, and sometimes the megapixel count will vary. They're all using backside illumination, the F numbers about the same, and so not surprisingly they produce similar results. And we're talking about the high-end cameras, phones here, and the higher end devices, but obviously it applies as you go down the market as well. It's just, you know, smaller numbers and cheaper components. But it really does feel like the Lumia 920, Nokia's sort of termed it the world's most innovative smartphone. Yes, that's a good marketing tagline. But there is, you know, some evidence and there's justification for calling that, because there really is several things on here that are different to the competition and actually set it apart. And I said in the review, it's the best all-round camera phone and it's got the best all-round screen. And I would stand by that. Now, there are other factors for reviewing when you're, you know, deciding which phone to buy, but that's why the 920 I think is attracting a lot of attention, you know, because it's a very serious contender for, you know, being right at the top of the smartphone league. And in a way, that's not really something that Nokia have had for a while. I think with the best will in the world, the Lumia 800, the 900, well, you know, solid devices and, you know, plenty of reasons to buy them, perhaps weren't challenging for that hardware crown in quite the same way. You know, this time it's different.
Okay, I have one question here, which we used to finish off the 920 section. It's from @pedant. It says, thanks to my time machine, I would like to ask you, what are the five negative things you wrote about in your review of the Nokia Lumia 920?
Five negative things I wrote about. He desperately tries to recall all the things he wrote. Well, I brought up the issue of weight. There is an indisputable fact that it is the heaviest smartphone of the kind of the current flagships out there, and by some distance actually. I did talk about the reasons for that, you know, the fact there are some extra hardware features in it, and most importantly the fact it's kind of a more robust device, actually the way it's been designed internally with kind of a three plate structure or three frame structure makes it mechanically quite strong. And so this means I think if you drop it, it's far more likely to survive. I wasn't really brave enough to test it out. The other thing I was disappointed by was the audio capture. Despite having the high amplitude microphones, these are the ones that are rich recording in the 808 PureView that are able to record at a louder sound level over a better frequency range than the typical smartphone. Videos are only captured in mono sound. it seems nuts to have the microphones in there and not use them. Then I guess it wasn't so much a negative point as, you know, something people need to be aware of. In the kind of good lighting conditions for the 920, there really isn't that much to choose between its camera results and all the other kind of high-end camera phones out there. And that's because in those conditions, optical image stabilization has much less of an effect than it does in low light. I also talked about how there were some curious hardware omissions, the most notable of which was the FM radio. Now, this is something I still use on my devices, so I was kind of annoyed to see this not there anymore. It's strange because it's actually still supported, as far as I know, by the Qualcomm system on a chip that's inside the device. I noticed this on some other Windows Phone 8 devices, so I wonder whether it's been removed from the platform by Microsoft. I don't know. We'll try and find out a bit more about that. And in a similar vein, you know, people who are used to Symbian devices may well like having the FM transmitter hardware in there. That's not there, nor is HDMI out. I remember asking Kevin Shields from Nokia about this at the launch event, and he said, well, this was kind of consumer research. We found that very few people were using those hardware features, and so, you know, we have to make a compromise between, you know, putting extra things in the device and it spoils the lines of the design. If you talk to the design teams at any smartphone manufacturer, they want to remove as many buttons and slots and ports as possible, which incidentally is one of the reasons why there's no micro SD card support, which again was something I found a bit disappointing. So, you know, in that sense, there's still room for improvement. And I guess I think I've probably got to five negative things there, haven't I, Ewan?
I think you have, yes, because if you haven't, we'll have all the letters we'll get. Let's kind of stay there, but move on. US pricing. Let's do a skip first. Let's very briefly talk about the UK market. Rafe, good or bad that when you buy the phone out of contract in the UK, it's still locked to the Everything Everywhere network?
Well, I have to say bad, because I would always prefer a device to be unlocked. And this is a kind of continuing story around EE exclusivity in the UK. I think the reason it's causing so much comment is really around the pricing that goes with it on Everything Everywhere. In order to get a kind of a reasonable data bundle, you're having to buy quite an expensive monthly contract, and you're being locked in for 2 years. And I think people feel somewhat justifiably that those prices are a little bit excessive, given that the LTE coverage is still pretty spotty, and even where it does exist, doesn't seem to be working brilliantly well. And more than that, EE have managed to annoy quite a lot of people by not getting the kind of deployment quite right. When you go in and get the SIM card, you're getting the wrong thing, and support isn't quite fixing things. You know, again, I talked to some of the Nokia spokespeople about this, and they, you know, gave a perfectly reasonable argument around the business case and being able to, you know, essentially create a sustainable sales ramp. They said it's important for them to be able to control the sales process, and, you know, they get a partner like Phones For You and like Everything Everywhere, are they able to do that? I'm still honestly quite skeptical. I mean, we'll have to wait and see what the results are. And I think for any of the people listening to this podcast who, you know, are aware of how these things work, can probably, you know, understand that, even if it still frustrates them. But they're undoubtedly going to miss out on sales that they might have otherwise had from people who aren't willing to switch networks, or even aren't willing to kind of go onto these more expensive tariffs. I should mention, though, that in theory, at least, Orange and T-Mobile will sell you the 920. It will not work in LTE mode. They'll probably provision you with a 3G SIM, and you can stay on their contract pricing. So worth looking into if you you want to upgrade or something like that. But yes, we'll have some more on this, because I'm going to have another briefing with Nokia around the UK launch. So I'll talk about that in the next podcast.
Yeah, and let's face it, if you're listening to this and this is an issue that materially affects you, you're a geek. There are ways around this. PayPal, Craigslist. You know, there are lots of, okay, it's not a great solution, but we need to make sure that the Nokia want to make sure that the device is seen in the best possible light in the first couple of months of its lifetime. And this is how they're doing it. And we can look at them, and we can run, and we can, Rafe, quietly between you and I, we can go, this is going to get us so many page views when we discuss this. Smile evilly.
Yeah, that's right. And honestly, the fact that people are getting worked up about this and ranting about this, it goes to show that actually the Lumia 920 is a pretty desirable handset.
And lots of people are now seeing people online going, I want this handset. Why can't I get this handset? Which indeed immediately makes them think, oh, that's an interesting handset. Why do they want that handset? Why does it raise so much emotion? And of course, Nokia's award-winning PR team.
Let's not be too unkind.
Oh, I was just going to suggest they might have managed it, but then I remembered that. Yeah, well, anyway, right, we should move on before I dig myself into hot water. That's people want to be on the network they like. Verizon now carries Windows Phone in the US. This is a really, really good thing. They're carrying their variant of the Lumia 820, 822, and the HTC Windows Phone 8X at some pretty snappy pricing as well.
It is, and this is important because pretty much everyone in the US will buy these phones on a contract, and so this is what they will regard as the pricing. For people who aren't in the US, we should probably explain Verizon is important because it's the number two carrier in the US or the number one carrier, depending on how you count things. AT&T and Verizon are the two, you know, the big boys, if you like, of the US marketplace. And so, you know, you kind of need to be on both with a device if you're going to get serious sales numbers. Verizon, the technology in terms of the network, slightly different. It's obviously using CDMA, although they are now moving to LTE as well. And I think both devices are going to work on LTE on the Verizon network at least. So they're getting a slightly different variant of the HTC 8X to Europe, which is getting a non-LTE version. But I think pricing for the 8X is $199 US for the Nokia 822, which is essentially a Verizon-specific variant of the 820 with a few differences. Wireless charging included for one, Gorilla Glass, some extra internal memory. I think it's 16 gigabytes as opposed to 8 gigabytes. And a slightly different design is $99 after a $50 rebate. So a pretty competitive price. And it's interesting to see the 822 is undercutting the 8X there. The 8X is the higher-end handset, so you would expect it to be more expensive, but it'll be really interesting to watch the sales numbers on that particular one.
It's also important because, again, we're talking back to geeks again, but let's not call them geeks. Let's call them influential people online who people read. Love Verizon and hate AT&T.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it seems bizarre coming from the UK where, yes, you have some feeling about your operator, but I don't think there's the level of vitriol that seems to be reserved for various operators in the US. And I once mildly suggested to a friend of mine that they might consider switching network, and they looked at me like I'd sort of trodden on a kitten or something really evil. Okay, so it's available on all the networks, so this is obviously going to help the rollout. You know, Verizon never really got behind Windows Phone very seriously. I mean, there were some devices from the original Windows Phone 7 launch.
I think they carried the trophy and that was it.
That's right. And then 7.5 didn't do anything. So, you know, they are really giving it a big push this time, and they've actually, you know, held an event to talk about their launch. And they've got a tagline which is brilliantly simple or something like that, sort of not that dissimilar to HTC, which I've just managed to quote and get completely wrong. But anyway, they've got a simple tagline. It's quite clear they're going to be giving it space in the stores. So be really interesting to watch this one. We can't really test these very easily, so we'd love to hear from some of our US audience what their experience is like with using either the 822 or indeed the 8X on Verizon.
And now we shall move over to the dark side, young Anakin, or as American listeners would know it, AT&T, because they've announced their pricings as well. Okay, Lumia 920, which they're carrying exclusively, dealt with the issue and the reasons in that in previous podcasts, $100. Wow. But you obviously have the 2-year contract to sign at the same time as that. It will come with a free charging plate while stocks last on that one. They can then move down to the Lumia 820. That's $49 on AT&T. Again, 2-year contract and so on and so on and so on. HTC Windows Phone 8X, 2 memory sizes available here. 8 gigabyte version at $99. 16 gigabyte version at $149. Rafe, that all sounds undercutting the big Android and iPhone prices by $50 to $100 in each time. That's a good thing, yes?
Yeah, it's got to be. I mean, this will encourage sales, as you say. Kind of used to seeing the high-end smartphones go for the $199 price point, and it's really just the HTC 8X, the 16 gigabyte version of that. So the Nokia device in particular, competitively priced. I think you'd have to be fairly nuts to go for the 820 when you compare an extra $50 for the 920, unless the actual size of the device is an issue for you, in which case I think fair enough. If you want a slightly smaller device, go for the 820. The 8X, 8GB at 99, that's a pretty interesting price point. 8GB feels a bit small when you're getting, you know, 32GB on the 920, but what's interesting about this, you know, we had this kind of HTC versus Nokia thing earlier in the year with the 900 and the Titan 2. And honestly, the 900 was the better buy. This time round, I think it's a lot closer. We're going to be having some 8X coverage on the site very shortly. But I think you can make a reasonable argument that the HTC and the 920 are kind of the two leading devices. For me, the 920 probably still just edges it, and this pricing kind of reinforces that. It's interesting because if you look at SIM-free pricing, the 8X is actually cheaper than the 920. You have to kind of look in Europe and through glass and all of that. But yes, pretty competitive pricing. And although there's some comment about the competing various Windows phone devices, actually the big deal is competing against iOS and Android devices. And they are notably cheaper. And I think that will make a difference in sales. It really will.
And also, there's a huge fuss online about the weight of the 920. I can't compare it to anything. But again, HTC, the 8X, is going into that smaller, thinner profile. It feels lighter in the hand from the very brief time that I've had a go with them at the launch events. And the shaping of the device makes it feel a smaller device as well. It's interesting that even though they've got the same, pretty much the same tech specs in terms of the base hardware, the differences that the two design teams have managed to get out of these two devices.
It is. I mean, there are some differences. I mentioned some of them earlier, and the screen size is obviously slightly different. So that's part of the reason. But this is kind of reinforcing what I was saying earlier. The 8X, I think you could probably say it takes the prize for the most elegant Windows phone design.
You could say that. I don't agree.
I know you don't agree, but I think it probably sacrifices just a little too much for design. What I will say, it is a really spectacular piece of design in that it feels lighter and thinner than it really is, particularly on the feel in the hand, because it's kind of like a squashed cushion. It's got very thin edges and it gets thicker towards the middle, and all the components are kind of stuffed towards the middle in terms of the internal design. But as a result, when you hold it in your hand, it feels quite a bit thinner than the 920. It actually feels thinner than the physical measurements really are. If you look at, you know, a direct comparison of these, there's actually only a few millimeters in it. When you think about that, you know, that's very little. But I think this will be the thing that, you know, will push people towards the 8X. If they want something that's just that, you know, bit smaller and a bit lighter, the 8X is the better choice. If you're looking for the extra features and kind of the top of the line stuff, yeah, it's probably going to be the 920. If you're looking for something cheap, yeah, I guess you're going to go for the Nokia 820, at least on all those AT&T pricing. And honestly, most of what I said there probably applies even when you're paying full price.
Somewhere, David, who's just recovered from the Angry Birds discussion of gravity, is now going, it feels lighter than it is. And it's going,
Well, it's perception. Yes, it's an irritating thing. I mean, I put the cc's in a comparison table that's cubic centimeters, and honestly, it feels like you need another measurement. Is what does it really feel like in the real world rather than a measurement of mass? But yeah, sorry, David, if you're listening to this.
There we go. Basically, it feels like a small can of PIMS.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
Right.
There we go. And the Lumia 920 feels like a Panda Pop bottle of Coca-Cola.
Yeah, it's like with the chocolate bars. Everyone knows they used to weigh about 55 grams, and then Cadbury's evilly took an extra couple of squares off the end of the chocolate bar, so they only weigh 35 grams now.
They stopped doing squares and made them into little bubble shapes and everything.
Exactly, and the reality is...
So they could cut up the bits at the side.
And the reality is, you don't notice when you're eating the chocolate bar, but when you get an old chocolate bar and compare it with a new chocolate bar, sort of weigh one in the other hand, you immediately notice the difference. But day to day, when you got it, you're not doing that kind of comparison. It's only reviewers that do that sort of thing.
No. If you do know that comparison, see, nowadays chocolate bars only placate my wife when I do something wrong for 37 minutes. 10 years ago, I could get a good 53 minutes out of my indiscretions.
There you go then. And of course, yeah, there is the battery capacity argument, which is a bit like the tin foil.
Chocolate doesn't have
chocolate
battery
bar.
Capacity.
Yeah, but it has the tin foil, and it's kind of a bit like that. And the 8X is 1800, the 920 is 2000 milliamp hours. The Samsung device, I think, is 2300 milliamp hours. So that's going to get the crown for the best battery life as far as battery goes. And I assume that Verizon's exclusive device, which we managed to miss, it's, I think, the Samsung ATIF Odyssey, so it's going to have some Homer in it or something like that. That's going to be available later in the year. We'll have the details on the site. I think you were suggesting we need to... Yeah, Space Odyssey. Oh, very good. Yes, and with Angry Birds. We're really getting the cracks in today. Shall we do the last bit of the podcast, Ewan?
Yeah, indeed, because we did mention tinfoil and didn't mention hats. So let's go for App of the Week, shall we?
Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it.
Yeah, so what's your App of the Week, Ewan?
Yay! Wordament. Come back to this one again. Xbox Live's free word search anagram square, 4x4 letters on it. They've done a huge number of updates over the last couple of weeks. They've added in extra languages. You can play in 12 languages. The user interface is now available in 20-odd languages. You've got different types of extra games in there. So there's some games where it might put a G in the middle of the board, but give it a triple score on it. So if you get through that G, you get far more points scoring. It's available on Windows Phone 8. It's been downloaded over a million times now, although I'll caveat that saying that includes some of their Windows 8 downloads. I'd love to see their Windows Phone direct downloads. But this is just continually improving. And I know people always go, oh, there's Words with Friends and the Scrabble Cell stuff, but they just take too long for me. Wordament lets me go in, have a 2-minute game, see how I'm going to compare to the rest of the world, very badly. Try again, be worse. And then just, I can get up off the toilet, pick it up off the charging pad if I didn't have one, and get on with my life. Wordament, free download, Xbox Live, carry on. My Xbox Live name, by the way, if you do want to challenge me, is Unex Spence.
Yeah, I have said I love Wordament as well, and I'm Rafe Blanford on there if you want to find me as well.
Yeah, I've found you on there. You're always above me.
Yeah, frenemies, love them. And then, of course, there's people like Funky Pigeon and some of the other top performers who get scary 1,000-plus scores every time they play. Really don't know how they do it. If you want a bit of fun, go and have a look on YouTube for some of those Wordament videos, and I swear the fingers are moving faster than I ever thought was possible. Anyway, yeah, my app pick of the week is something called Touch Timer. It's a very simple countdown timer, so if you're boiling an egg or doing some cooking, it's ideal for that sort of thing. It's got a nice UI. It's actually by the same developers who did a app of the week that I chose sometime earlier in the year, Metro Time. I just thought this stood out for me because I was looking for kind of a countdown clock when doing some cooking, and it worked really well. So you get that in the show notes. Well worth it if that's what you need. It's the only thing it does. Simple UI, but a free download from the Windows Phone Marketplace.
So there we go. That is your All About Windows Phone Insight podcast for the week. Rafe will now recap the entire podcast in 5 keywords. 3, 2, 1, go.
Lumia 920, Windows Phone 8, America, Star Wars.
That's 4 tags.
Wireless.
There we go. Hey! Join us next week. We'll have 5 more words. Rafe, what are the 5 words we'll have next week?
Lumia 820.
Yeah.
HTC 8X.
Yep.
Apps.
Yeah. If you say week next. Well, all right, Steve, we're going. It's Friday the 9th of November. Thanks for listening. Comments is always back at the website, www.allaboutwindowsphone.com. That was Rafe Blanford.
And you can tell it's the end of the week, especially when recording this with Friday Humour.
To say that was Ewan Spencer, ta-ra for now.
Oh, and that was Ewan Spencer, ta-ra for now.
Cut, take 6. Hello, good afternoon, good morning, good evening.
Goodbye.
Yay. Catch you next week. Ta-ra for now. Enjoy the weekend.